I think, are out of balance in terms of our understanding of one another. You know, if we are all created in the image of God, what is it that we're doing to share with each other what that image should be? And I just want to thank you and the crew and all the actors for never once letting us down in a situation where a lot of us have come to believe in the reality of what that show represented. And the movies that are coming out, the things like E.T., and thank God for people like George Lucas and Steven Spielberg, who have really broken ground in that area, we're beginning to see this thing called the extraterrestrial hypothesis from a very humanistic viewpoint. You know, no more monsters. By the way, did you know that they just remade Invaders from Mars? It opens up June 6th. Did you catch that on the billboards?
No, I read where it was.
Yeah, that goes back to, what, 1952, 1953? Yeah. We're still dealing with the alien, you know, that grotesque thing that eats people,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's a shame, but anyway, I just wanted to say thanks, Bones.
Well, thank you very much, and before I sign off, I want to say that I've been a very fortunate human being to have been a part of this show. It's a phenomenal show, and it has, as you say, it has touched a chord throughout the United States and Europe as well, all a load of foreign countries, and it has the same effect with the young people and the old people. It's all ages. It encompasses people from 5 and 6 years up until into their 80s, where we go on personal appearance, where there are thousands of people there. And it's been a great influence to the young people of this nation, as well as we have perhaps the biggest university audience in the country. And it's just been a marvelous feeling to have known that we have influenced the youth of this nation. NASA works with us on our personal appearances. There is always somebody there from NASA with us because they feel that we have lassoed the youth, so to speak, and they're there to sell them on their program. And kids have been influenced from, I have people who write me who have gone to medical school as a result of McCoy, and some are entering into all fields of science as a result of this show. And it's been a remarkable experience for me and all of us on the show. And I just want to tell you all how much I enjoyed talking to you tonight, and I will keep listening to you, Bill, and it was a pleasure to talk to you, George, and Jason.
Thank you.
It was
Thank
our
you.
Pleasure to have you aboard. One thing to make you feel good.
Yes.
Over at our house, we have all of these little video cassettes. The kids come in, there's all of George Lucas's and Spielberg's things in there, among as well as most anything. And every time I go in there, it's either the Rothacon, or they're searching for Spock, or they're doing something. They watch it over and over again.
Well, you're going to love number 5, because I think it's really the first show that we've done that is going to pick up an outside audience, not only the Star Trek people, but people that would not ordinarily look at it. You're in for, I think, a wonderful surprise, all of you.
Well, we're looking forward to it.
Bones, remember one thing. There's the overwhelming, repetitive message that comes in from people that we talk to who actually have extraterrestrial contacts, and believe me, it happens. I had one myself. It changed my entire life. But more importantly, they state that we are all teachers and we are all students. And what you've done is you're teaching every personal appearance you make, every movie that comes out teaches. Sometimes it's not always positive. But you're a teacher, my friend, and please continue, okay?
Well, thank you very much. It's been a joy talking to all of you.
All right, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Bill.
All right.
Bye-bye.
I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind on Talk Radio 79 to smile about. We're also very pleased tonight to have on the line, who has joined us here, Mr. Robert Oxiner. Is that your name, Robert?
Yeah, Robert Oxiner. Pretty good.
Uh-huh. You have been seriously engaged in looking into this reality for some time.
Since about 1950, when I saw my first one.
What is your consensus now, as you've done monumental work up and down the line?
Well, the bottom line is that we're being visited by some intelligent form of probably beings we don't know yet, or at least a craft. We don't know who they are or why they're here for sure. But I keep being asked from time to time, what is the... why does the Air Force take the attitude that they do? I don't know if you're ready for a comment like that or not on the program.
Go right ahead, Robert. I've made a few myself along the line.
Okay. got a beep there. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Generally, the Air Force...
155,000 workers are on strike against eight.
The Air Force has collected what you call reports, and they have kept them in maybe chronological order, but they've done very little investigations. And people say, well, why does the Air Force take the attitude they do, trying to make confuse people that they haven't seen anything? And I say, well, they may have more data than you and I have, but they don't know any more about the origin of this phenomena than you and I know, but they don't want you to know that they don't know. This is because Big Brother has to be, always in control.
Well, it's one thing to say that, Bob, but also there are probably along the way, there are some legitimate reasons for some of the secrecy.
Well, that's just my feeling. I'm not saying that they're wrong in doing it, but that's my bottom line on the Air Force's.
But this total denial of the fact, I don't think is legitimate. That's a personal opinion of mine.
I agree with that.
Anything that would in some way or another shake up national security certainly shouldn't be public knowledge if it will harm national security. But a realization that these things do exist is not going to hurt national security.
Well, I've seen over 80 of these things, as Jason well knows, and some of them have been excellent sightings, and one of these will tie in with what Constantine asked about earlier, about animal behavior, and one particular close sighting I had in Louisville, Kentucky, where I was living in the early 50s. I came home late one night, and here was four very bright lights hovering over my house, and they were there for... make a story short, they're there for maybe 10 minutes. But while I was standing out in the yard watching these four, a cat in the neighborhood who never talked to anyone suddenly jumped up on me and demanded that I hold it while we were watching these four lights together.
Something was affecting that the perception of the cat, and I
sure was,
in a way.
Yes.
Well, we do know that there is some strange electromagnetic and scalar activity that seems to be associated with the UFO. Are you going to stay on the line for us?
I'd be pleased to.
Because there are a lot of questioners that are lining up here, and I can't think of anyone better to add to our panel. You can take DeForest Kelly's place.
All right, thank you very much.
And we'll get to those callers in just a second. It's open mind. I'm Bill.
And on the telephone, DeForest Kelly, who you know as Dr. McCoy, Bones, on the Star Trek series, relating a couple of incidences that he saw. One, the famous sighting over Los Angeles in 1942 when we shot at him, and another one back in 1950. We appreciate him joining us. We have Robert Augzehner on the phone, who is really one of the brilliant investigators of the UFO. And, of course, in studio we have George Green, who has spent a great deal of time and energy checking into those. And we also have Jason Rann, whose new book will soon be out on this particular subject at Prentice Hall. We have on the line Paul, who has waited and waited, but Paul, I'm glad you did. Welcome aboard.
I thought I was going to have to go into the future and come back. this is so phenomenal what's happening in these observations, but I have to ponder the question whether these are extraterrestrial objects or objects that are coming from the future. Now, that sounds way out.
No, it's not way out. I've heard that a lot of times.
And there's a lot of hypothetical statements you can say to back it up, such as, number one, the different shapes. You talked about a cylindrical object tonight. You talked about spherical. You talked about a saucer shape. They could be that from the future they're coming with different types of improved time transportation equipment, and they're coming in, and they're coming in with a different model. I don't know if how a theory like that sounds.
Well, that theory has been put forth on many occasions, and it's very perceptive of you, Paul. You're talking about, say, the Earth Society in the future coming back and checking on us in the past, as it were.
Then there's also the thing that they don't want to make contact with us for very obvious reasons.
They're trying to shoot them down.
Obviously they're coming from a future where they really aren't too worried about what we could throw at them, so to speak, if they're such an advanced science. Hey, but there's also this other thing. Either you touched upon it tonight, matter and dematter, but let's say the energy source that brings them here has to be so intense, even though they're coming from a future, we'll put it this way, they can only generate so much to stay here to observe, and then their source goes and they have to go back.
That's only if you think in terms of energy supplies as we do now, which are very unconventional.
Well, I'm thinking perhaps of harnessing the magnetism of the universe. Who says that's... that's not possible. Way off into the future.
I have a question for Paul.
Yes, sir.
Did you ever consider the fact that they might be coexistent with us right here and now, but vibrating at a different rate, be able to precipitate into our environment at will?
Well, I've been down Sunset Boulevard.
Paul, this is George Green. The investigations that we've been involved with are direct contacts with the extraterrestrials, and they have given us various methods of propulsion, which entail magnetism, as you're talking about, is one of their methods. They do frequency transfers. They do a lot of different things. But one thing you were talking about, the future, it's the now that we have to talk about. And what is the future and what is the past and what is now? Because what you're talking about, somebody coming from the future and coming back, it's we're talking about people that may have accelerated ahead a little bit. It's like this week, we were it was on television, they were discussing the primitives that are over in the Far East at this point that have just accelerated from the Stone Age to now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's the difference between us and a Model T? Or like some analogies I look at, how long ago did we invent the flush toilet? It hasn't been that long.
And they even have an automatic one now, by the way.
Yeah, that's what I understand.
Sir Thomas Scrap, the man of the century.
Yes, he certainly did a lot of good things. We now are seeing the physics and dynamics that will make it very possible for us to what the physicists call bend or curve space-time, which seems to be very much a part of the reality of space travel rather than pushing it out there like the Enterprise went.
But, I mean, for the skeptics, I say, like, you're in a seven-second delay. Mm-hmm. Okay, this is kind of playing with the future a little bit. In a very small, and I realize it's nothing to it, but it's a point is I still believe it can be done, it will be done at some time in the future. And, as you say, you're going to keep that window open.
One of the things that interests me, Paula, we're going to have to go here, is that the physical form, as has been observed, is quite radically different in many cases from the species that we are familiar with here on Earth, and then sometimes it's identical to ours. And they are telling us that they are from different places in talking to the contactees. But it is an interesting hypothesis, Paul, and it's been presented before. I thank you for sharing that with us. We're going to take a break now for ABC News. We'll be back with another hour of a UFO update. Your questions, we've got a lot of good people to answer them on this Saturday night, so come on.
I'm still here.
All right. And we have on the line, who's been waiting for a while, Jackie. Hello, Jackie.
Hi, how you doing?
Thank you for hanging on there.
Okay. I had an incident that happened in August of 1966, and it still stays on my mind even now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we were traveling from Georgia to Washington, D.C. Okay, we saw a lot of people out, and the police were out, and it was during the time when they were having racial tension. So we were thinking it was a riot or something. So then we went down the highway, and it was an object that was treetop level. It was about the size of a small two-bedroom house. It was spinning, and it was banking, and every time it was straightened up, you would hear it click. But you didn't hear any other sound besides that. And it had lit windows. And it's been bothering me ever since then.
That was in Washington, D.C., near the mall?
I don't know where it was. All I know, it was on the highway, and the highway was sort of deserted. But before we got to the highway, it was people everywhere, and it was police standing on each corner with rifles.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been bothering me ever since then. I haven't heard anything. And when I got to my aunt's house, they was on the news then, but other than that, I never heard anything else about it. And it was terrifying.
It seems to me you related this story to us...
Years ago.
Years ago.
Yeah, but I can't get anybody to sign affidavits because they don't want to get involved.
I did check out on that story.
Mm-hmm.
And that sighting is a matter of record.
So it is true.
It is true.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, Jackie, I appreciate you coming.
Yeah.
Well, boy, have I got a memory tonight. You know, I had to reach back for that one, but it sounded familiar because I do remember the case. Mouflon has it on record. Bob, do you recall that at all?
No, I don't recall that one.
It was near the mall in Washington, D.C. There was a big civil rights demonstration going on in the summertime. I think it was 1952, I think, is what Jackie said. And she was right on target with it all. And, of course, it's one of those things that the government's definitely not going to talk about unless it landed on the mall and the robot came out. You know, and Michael Rennie appeared.
Wasn't that a great movie?
It was a great movie.
Yeah.
A great, great movie. Okay, Steve, you're on.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm fine, and thank you for hanging on to me.
Sure. Two questions. My first is, I assume that
the defense mechanism of the United States is not being triggered by any of these. We're not scrambling jets or anything like that.
Wrong.
Very wrong.
Okay, well, I'd like to hear a little bit more about that. Let me ask my second question so I can get off. The second would be, you've talked a lot about UFO sightings. Is the connection between those sightings and extraterrestrials, or whatever you call them, simply because these things are just not explainable by any technology here on Earth, or is there some positive connection? In other words, have they been traced to outer space, quote-unquote, or is it simply by virtue of the fact that we can't explain them by anything we know here on Earth, therefore, by process of elimination, they had to come from somewhere else?
Good question.
Answer those two for me, please.
All right. Hang in there. George?
I'd like to answer the question in kind of another manner. We've put together several books on several different sightings that we've had that have gone into the direct information that you want to know. And these books are available through our company, America West. If you got a pencil, we'll put this down. I'll give you our address. It's America West.
You snuck into that, didn't
you? It's the only time tonight. And it's Post Office Box 441335, and it's Aurora, Colorado, 80044.
And we have that on file in case you missed it, and you can...
call in and get it. But in our books, we will go directly into all the information that you're talking about, each different one. If you just send us a letter or a card, we'll send you back a list of each one that we have, along with a lot of information, pictures, etc., that may startle you a little.
Okay.
Well, I think one of the things Steve wanted to know is that have we had any kind of a valid tracing that shows that these craft do seem to go beyond our technology into outer space?
We have some video information, videos, where we have the craft being chased by fighters, our fighters or other fighters shooting bullets at them and whatever, their missiles at them, and it just doesn't do anything. We actually have, you know, physical evidence that this happened. We burned out. There was a French Mirage fighter that made about 20 passes at one craft, and we have photographs of this information again. A moving photographs of this.
That was Switzerland, wasn't it?
That was in Switzerland, yes.
Yeah, that was the Billy Meyer case in Switzerland. And you can see the craft, so you know that it's happening. And they tell us, basically, that anything that we put out towards them, like you shoot a bullet, it'll come back out and dissipate. There's no way we can go to their defenses. But in the books and in the information that we have with the contacts of other people that are in communication with them, they explain a lot of their technology, and that's the reason why I brought up this our book list at this time.
Yeah, that certainly answers my first question. On the second, though, if, Bill, you started to pursue that point, again, not that that's not interesting information, but that seems to indicate my first explanation, that really the reason we say these are from somewhere else is because they're simply too advanced, rather than any sort of positive evidence that they have to come from somewhere else.
That we are doing it ourselves, and it's secret. Jason, you have some comments on that?
Yeah, this field that we call ufology is very complicated. I hope I can last here. And it transcends anything that the average person on the street would totally understand unless one were to become actively involved in it. There are dozens of research groups. There's at least a half a dozen major UFO organizations. They are as divided on their principles of understandings as they are on their principles of agreements, okay? And each of them obviously makes a contribution. But what the problem is that we have very qualified people trying to tackle a phenomenon that has been at the core of a consciousness-raising scenario since time began, at least time as we know it in terms of human recorded form. And what we have to deal with is basically not trying to understand the entire phenomenon at once, okay? The best way to read and learn about this subject, if you are interested, is, in fact, to go out and buy books. Go to any major bookstore, okay? These bookstores have listings of all current books that are available on the subject, even books
that you can get at the library. So what you really got to do is find an area that you feel you're interested in and then take a stab at it. And once you get hooked, I think you're going to find that you're going to want to find out, well, what makes this happen? Why did this thing occur? And what you're going to wind up doing is become a self-involved student of what we call ufology. And from that, there will be a number of other mental awareness patterns that will take place. As I was talking to Bones about, you know, we're all teachers and we're all students. Some of us have had a chance to see and talk to beings that are not necessarily from this realm as we understand it. And what we've got to deal with is keeping an open mind and an open mic and be willing to go out and ask the questions. I can remember 10 years ago when you didn't even dare ask about the subject. It was just a total subject of ridicule.
Well, Steve asked a question.
Can I take in one more time, Bill?
I was just going to try to reiterate this, and maybe Bob has it
on here. Yeah, I got a comment on that.
Where we have trace, say, with radar tracings or something of this effect, the movement of these things either coming into space from way out in space or them going out, that we have some evidence that that actually has happened. Isn't that the question you asked, Steve?
Not that or any other method. There would be others besides actually tracking it from outer space. Maybe materials or
some proof
like that,
other than deduction. We can't do it, so it came from other space. What proof do we have, Bob?
Well, we have many radar reports. We have some astronaut reports. People that were going back and forth to the moon, they reported certain things which are kind of low-key. They never got much publicity. But some of the astronauts have admitted seeing things out there that they could not explain by our orthodox scientific explanations.
Okay, can any of these be cited specifically? I've heard two references that I'm especially interested in. One that I don't know all your names, the gentleman with the sore throat mentioned...
Okay, Jason.
Mentioned that... Some of us, was the term he used, have had contact with beings not from this realm, or something to that effect.
Right, that's right.
And then the gentleman who just spoke made a reference to astronauts making sightings, although they haven't been highly publicized.
Right.
Can I get some specific references on those two particular types of occurrences?
Yeah. Okay, let me give it a shot.
Thanks.
As I mentioned earlier, I had a rare opportunity at a very young age to be involved in a landing that took place in Manitoba, Canada. It's too long to give you the entire story, but I'll give you the highlights of it. I was in Erin on a lake by myself in a boat, and I got caught in a storm. And the boat was sinking, and I was pretty sure that this was it. You know, the kid was checking out. And I passed out not only from fear, but from exposure to the storm that was there. And when I woke up, the boat, little rowboat that I was in, was completely covered by what looked like a pink cocoon. It had a transparency to it, and outside I could see the storm. Well, anyway, this cocoon guided the little boat that I was in to an area out from the center of the lake, and when I finally awoke a second time, the boat was rocking in a field of bulrushes and cattails, and I made my way up this beach that shouldn't have been there to this field of what looked like golden wheat. Everything looked too strange to me, and I finally wound up going into this field against a wall where, again, I was sort of fell asleep. I went kind of like into a trance. And when I woke up, I viewed coming at me an apparition or a manifestation or whatever you want to call it of a very, very large, circular, what we call flying saucer. And this craft came right up and landed about 150, maybe 200 yards in front of me in the middle of this field. And for 5.5 hours, I was brought in what they call telemetrically. They entered my conscious awareness state, brought my mind and my consciousness into their ship, and I spent about 5.5 hours conversing with them, being taken through the ship, being explained who they were, what they were, why they were here, what they were attempting to do. And at the time that the ship broke through our atmosphere, something happened to it in its one of its magnetic phases, and a very important piece of their navigational equipment was rendered severely damaged. And what they were there to do, some kind of a research survey on the platelet movement that we now have come to understand trigger earthquakes. It was a reconnaissance ship. It had approximately 17 to 19 humanoid beings on it. They looked very much like we do. When I asked if that's exactly how they looked, it was explained to me that if I actually saw them the way they were, I might not be able to understand their humanoid form. So they all looked the same to me. They had basically humanoid faces, but their face outlines were sort of fuzzed out. Yet it seemed like I could see through them, and they all looked alike to me. And what happened was that I had been caught in the path of their entry through the atmosphere, and that electromagnetic device that they sent out actually shielded me and brought my boat in specifically so that I could be there at that particular time. And I was told three things. I would be a musician, I would be an author, and I would be a teacher. I never really understood all of it at the time, but through a process of many, many years of what they call telemetric communications, or we would call telepathy, I am now able to go into a conscious, what we call trance state. I receive channeling. I'm writing several books. I've come up with information that I'm sharing with other people in the field. And what they're doing is they're involved in a process of raising human consciousness for the coming times that our planet is about to go through. And that could be the subject of a whole show for you, Bill.
Mm-hmm. We've touched on it before.
And the reports that come in from all over the world are basically the same. We must take responsibility for our own doings and our own wrongdoings. They cannot interfere. They can only point and guide us in the right direction. And the books that Bill or that can be gotten through Golden West are excellent examples of intelligent communication that has been transcribed into books that are readily available. And I do suggest that if your listeners are interested to the point of getting involved in the subject, go buy the books, read them, come back and ask questions, and you'd be surprised how it works in what we call our implant reality patterns, okay?
All right, Steve. Oh, Steve left us there. All right, we'll be right back in a moment. I'm Bill Jessica on the line. Hello, Patricia. Hello, Patricia. Earth to Patricia. there you are.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. I have like 3 points I want to make, and then we can chit-chat as you see fit. From listening to your earlier, conversation, the whole UFO sighting possibility, I see really as a conception of the possibility of possessing a soul. This is a concept that no one really ever talks about, that we might actually possess a soul, that people might operate regardless of all of their programming as coming from within some kind of core of themselves, whether it's fashionable or whether it's, profitable or whatever it may be. And the whole idea of sighting UFOs, I think, only comes to those who are somehow attuned to the whole idea of there being an entity of a UFO out there. I mean, many people walk down a street and don't notice, geraniums or fire hydrants or anything at all. And some people actually tune in to a UFO beaming in, and all you can consider is that it's a part of them that's being connected up with something else out there. And from what all of the other people have talked about, there is the conceivability that somebody out there wants to speak to somebody down here. Another point that I'd like to make is the whole idea that this only happens if somebody is really ready to receive a conception or a possibility of something like this happening. I mean, if you're not into it at all, nobody out there will try to disturb you who is really only interested in doing something else mundane, your life.
Those are interesting kind of hypotheses, Patricia, but there's some interesting facts on top of it. And I take
you back
about 9 days ago when hundreds of thousands of people in São Paulo, Brazil, saw them all at once.
That's what I have something else that can relate to that exactly. That's why I say those folks in São Paulo, terrific.
It happened in Tucson.
In Tucson. Can I tell you a story that happened to me when I was growing up? I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, and I grew up with someone who was a Mormon. And had no conception of any of this at all, and had no, certainly by her upbringing, you know, it was the farthest thing from her mind. And her little brother went out in their back 40, as they say down home, and he saw...